at Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Peter Schlosser, and I'm really, really looking forward to talking with you about the music that you've written for Destiny 2 and Forsaken. So it's great to have a chance to chat.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. And I'm always surprised and amused at how people are really interested in what we do, and it's not just me.
And not just your mom.
That's right.
No, it's such an interesting series to do because composers that I've talked with love talking about what they do. And it's true, you don't get an opportunity enough to talk about it, and you should. So,
well, thank you. I really appreciate this platform because, you know, we talk with our friends who are also in the business. And of course, we're excited to geek out with each other about what we do. But then, you know, when there's other people that are outside of it that go, no, tell me more. You go, really? Are you sure?
No, it's fantastic. And I can only imagine what a thrill it must have been to be invited to be part of the music team for Bungie working on Destiny.
It was great. It was really, really unexpected. And it all started, you know, I guess you could say, I'm trying to figure out when, how many years ago this was, in, you know, that I was in college, but that's how I know Sky Lewin, who is, you know, he's the music director at Bungie. So we've known each other for many years, and we've worked on a bunch of stuff in college and outside of college. And about 2 years ago, he called me and he said, what are you doing? And I said, I don't know, what you got? And he said, well, we got this game that we're working on. And I said, yeah, I know. So, there's a lot of shorthand that happened because we've had this long relationship. And so he just said, well, here's the basics of it. Here's what we need. Send me stuff when you're ready. You know, I mean, I know that's the very short Twitter version of it, but that's essentially how it happened. And so there was a lot of things that we didn't really have to talk about because we've known each other for so long.
That is so cool. You were both at the Berklee School in Boston.
Yes. Sky majored in percussion performance, and then we were both doing the music production and engineering. And then my other major, so he was doing dual major, I was also dual major, and my other major was film composition. So we were meeting sort of in the middle in the music production and engineering. So we were, you know, many hours in the studio producing and recording, and so that's how we became really good friends.
That is very cool. And C-Paul came from that program too, I think.
He did. So he and Sky were roommates. And as far as I understand, C-Paul got an internship at Bungie even before he left Berklee. And so he got involved at Bungie really, really early on, and then brought on Sky, you know, many years down the line. And then Sky called me. So it's all very incestuous and really, really fun.
Well, you must have played Halo at some point.
Yes,
so my being able to work with Mike Salvatore must have been pretty cool.
Oh, for sure. I mean, my brother is much more the gamer than I am, but you know, he's been a Halo fan for years and would always sing the theme and you know, so then, you know, when this came up and I said, "Hey, I'm going to be working with the guy who wrote that stuff." He was very excited. And you know, obviously, as was I, but you know, him having spent many more hours listening to it, he was like, "Oh, that's really amazing!" So it got us both really excited.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Bungie, their music is so distinctive. I mean, the Halo music, as soon as you heard a couple measures of it, you could tell it was from Halo. And the Destiny music is this very same, very distinctive. It has a different palette and obviously, you know, for different worlds. And Mike and Sky both refer to this kind of mysterious thing as Destiny gravy that makes everything kind of sound like it's all from the same. So with your work for them, I know that you get the themes ahead of time, and then it's kind of up to you to play around with them and work them into whatever, you know, wherever they're going to fit in the level or a boss battle, right?
Right, right. And so, you know, because they're on site in Seattle, they get to work on themes a lot earlier. And so when the themes get to me, they've been, you know, sort of approved and revised however many times. And it's really fun to grab those themes and go nuts with them.
Thank you.
have given me a lot of freedom, and I really appreciate the fact that they just go, here's a thing, here's kind of the basis of what we're doing for this level or whatever, and then they just kind of let me go nuts. And that's been really, really fun to reharmonize and, you know, maybe, you know, hint at a couple of notes here and there, and then maybe grab another theme from somewhere else. And I seem to be doing okay because they're still calling me and they seem to like what I'm doing.
Well, they really threw you in at the deep end with the Destiny 2 soundtrack, because your cue Towerfall is at a pivotal moment very early on in the game. And for, you know, someone like me who's been playing Destiny from the beginning, the idea that they could just blow the whole world up and wreck everything was really pretty shocking. And your Towerfall cue is amazing because you were able to work in that Cabal theme. Those are the ones who are wrecking the tower. And the way you did it is just so powerful and just really, really amazing.
Thank you. I give the props to them for, you know, for writing these really cool themes that I get to mess with. That's what I really love about this whole thing, is that it's sort of very collaborative. There's a lot of back and forth. Most of it is saying, oh, that's super cool what you did there, and that's amazing. So there's a lot of love between all of us. And you know, we're all really passionate about what we do as musicians and the games. And so that really translates, I think, to the music that we're writing. And especially when we get together during the scoring sessions, that's sort of the ultimate experience of having been, you know, stuck in our studios for so long, and then we finally get to go out and have real players play it and, you know, kind of bring the music to life, and you go, oh, that's what I meant to do. That's what it actually sounds like. So it's really, really fun to do that.
Oh, I can just imagine. I was going to ask you if you do get to go to the scoring sessions, because clearly you would have input on how you wanted the pieces performed. So that's really neat that you get to go too.
It is. It's really fun. It's, you know, so there's, there's sort of checks and balances, I guess, that I try to go through, so that when the musicians get to see the music, they don't roll their eyes. And that starts with me sending my music first to Mike and Sky for them to approve. Then it goes to our orchestrator, who's amazing, who is also a friend from Berkeley, Mike Feingold, who's an incredible guitar player, and he's an eternal student of orchestration. He does a really amazing job. So it gets to him first, and then ultimately it ends up on the stage in Nashville, where we've been recording a lot of the score. And I've also been lucky enough to convince them to let me conduct for better or worse, which is really, really fun to be up there with the musicians. And it really is incredibly satisfying for them to, it stops being just your music. And all the players that are there put some of themselves in the music, and that really makes all the difference.
Those orchestras, both the Nashville Scoring Orchestra and the Northern Sinfonia, and then the chorus, they are such pros. And their sight reading abilities are just absolutely brilliant. And not only that, I mean, they really bring a lot of musical expression to the music. So it must be a real thrill to be up on the podium.
It is. It is kind of bananas how they, you put something in front of them and you kind of just go, okay, well, press record, because it's going to be really great from the start. Then you kind of get into, the little details, but right off the bat, they can kind of read anything, and not just read it. They're playing it with the intent, and it's really great.
Yeah, I'll bet. Well, clearly Bungie has a huge budget for the music and the assets that you get to use, like these massive orchestras and the chorus and soloists. I mean, that's just an incredible luxury. So how do you like winnow it down so that it's not like overwhelming? I mean, do you set sort of the limits of the palette that you want to use for each cue and then work from there?
Yes, we are incredibly spoiled by that, and I love how they've been, you know, they've kept that standard. It's like, okay, well, you know, we can only make it better from here on out. The level has to stay at a certain point, and if not, it has to go up. And they've certainly managed that. And I give both Mike and Sky a lot of credit for saying, no, we're going to do it right. This is how we're going to do it. We're going to record properly and go to these great orchestras and great studios. And I don't really think that much about kind of paring it down. I think, you know, maybe the opposite. I try to see how I can, first of all, keep it interesting for me, which hopefully translates to that being interesting also for the player who ultimately is going to be listening to this for hours. So I try to just kind of, you know, with every section of the game, I just try to write a better cue using, you know, using Sky and Mike's themes. It's kind of cool to be able to write these things that musicians will then play, and you go, oh, they can do that. Okay, well, next time I'm going to try something else. So it's always kind of, you know, going up in level, which is really, I mean, we're so spoiled by that.
Oh yeah, that's very, very cool, because most of the time, or very often, it's more a case of like scaling things down
Right.
to fit the resources. And so what a luxury. That's
Yes, for
so
sure.
cool. One of your cues on the soundtrack is called Of Starlight and the Dark, and I really, really love how subtly you used the opening Forsaken theme. It starts with the chorus, and then there's a second theme that comes in with the orchestra. And that one, the way you make that transition from the chorus that you use, and then there's like a solo cello, and it's just such a great example of how flexible these themes are.
Yeah, they are. And it's nice to be able to go, you know, to listen sort of the first iteration. Well, for me, because they've probably gone through several before it gets to me, to listen to that and go, okay, that's really cool. As it is, I'm trying to figure out how to make it slightly different. It's still, you know, still recalling the original. And that's a muscle that I've been flexing, is just trying to grab these, you know, four notes, five notes, whatever the, you know, however many notes, and keep the essence, and just try to maybe reharmonize a little bit here and there, or maybe grab the first three notes and then kind of deceptively go somewhere else where you wouldn't really expect it. So it's always fun to figure out new ways to do variations on those themes.
Thank you. have there been times where you've like pushed the envelope a little bit too much? And I'm just wondering what kind of guidance they give you in a situation like that.
Not yet. I mean, I don't think I have. Maybe I need to do some more of it. I don't know. Maybe, you know, get a little rebel in me and go, okay, guys, what? How about this thing? But no, they, you know, like I said, they gave me a lot of freedom to explore, and you know, sometimes I can't remember when it happened, but I think I wrote something that was based off of one of their themes that morphed into something else, and it sort of became a new theme that then they used on something, you know, on another cue that they were doing. So it was kind of cool that to have, you know, the initial idea from them morph into something else, and that became a new theme that was used for another section of the game.
Oh, that's very cool. Yeah, it sounds like it is a real team effort. And so how often are you able to, you know, get the team together so that you guys can share your ideas?
Not often enough. You know, they're in Seattle, I'm in LA, so we don't really get together that much. It's all really done through phone and email. And it's not until we get together for the actual scoring that we get to kind of hang out. But at that point, it's sort of, you know, almost all done, quote unquote. You know, I mean, there's the stuff that happens after, but once we get to the scoring stage, it's all pretty much settled to where it's gonna, to how it's gonna live from that point on.
So do they send you like early builds of the game or screenshots or something so that you've got something to work with visually?
They do not, which is interesting because it's, so that's one of the, you know, kind of disadvantages in a way, because I'm not on site. And Bungie's very, very protective about their IP, and, you know, rightly so. So there's very, very little information that leaves that building. So I will get, you know, little snippets of, you know, ideas of what is happening in the story. I don't really get that much detail.
Wow.
So, you know, I get the themes, and then I get, you know, a Twitter version of the story of what's happening on that level. So I get little nuggets of information, and, you know, and then I go, okay, well, then I kind of let my imagination run wild and write sort of based on that nugget.
Wow. That's a real gift then. There are six barons who've killed Cade, who's like this amazing, yeah, I loved him. He was such a cool character. And so you have to get revenge and kill the six barons. And one of the barons is the machinist, and you wrote the music for that skirmish.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's such a perfect fit. So being able to do that without getting any kind of gameplay in advance, that's really, that's amazing.
It is interesting how that happens, right? I mean, and you know, I give Sky and Mike a lot of credit for being able to say, look, here's the little nuggets of information that we're going to give you. And then it kind of works, you know, so they, you know, it ends up in the game and you go, oh yeah, that totally works. And you go, I don't know how you guys did it, but there it is. You know, it's pretty cool. We'll be right back.
I bet. So have you played Forsaken yet since it's
come out? I haven't had a chance to yet. I was, you know, on that, and then I was working on a TV show. So I, thankfully, I've been busy writing music that I haven't had a chance to play it just yet.
I know that's kind of, well, it's a paradox, I guess, that so many you work so hard on this music and then you don't get a chance to see it in the game.
Right. But it, I mean, it is really, really satisfying and really great when people come to me and say, oh, I've been playing and the music is really fun. And that's sort of the gift for me, not necessarily playing it, but knowing that other people are and that they're really enjoying the fruits of our labor.
Oh, yeah. And you've got a huge audience, too. I mean, millions and millions of players around the world.
It's kind of crazy to think about that, right? I mean, it's almost, I would almost rather not. It's like, wait a minute, there's all these people listening to our music. But, you know, so it's humbling for sure. But it's also very motivating because it makes you go, okay, well, I gotta make it better next time, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Are there some cues in particular that you feel like everything just really came together for Forsaken?
I know this is a sort of a cop-out answer, but I don't know if I have a favorite. The favorite part for me, like I said earlier, is on any cue, is getting to the stage, to the scoring stage, and being in the studio, and, you know, the first downbeat where you hear everybody playing those notes that you've been, you know, massaging for so long. And it really just ends up coming alive, and it reminds you of why you're doing these things, right? So it's, and I think about that a lot as I'm writing, right? I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be played by humans, and these are the humans that are going to be playing it. So getting to that point it's really just incredibly satisfying.
I can just imagine. I mean, do you use a sample library once you've got the themes and sort of the plan of a cue set up? Do you plug in samples so that you can get a vague sense of?
When I'm writing, I write, you know, a fully produced demo as best as I can get it with the samples. So with everything, pretty much everything that I write, it's almost to the point I pretend that there will be no actual musicians playing it. I mean, you know, I write it with them in mind, but I massage it until it's the best that I can make it sound with the samples, so that there's maybe less guessing on the audience part, and, you know, the first audience being, you know, Mike and Sky, and the second audience being our orchestrator, so that all the phrasing is there and all the articulations are there, and so there's very little room for doubt as to what the intention was.
Yeah, that is very cool. And then what happens once your cues have been recorded? Do you get them back and then you can mix them with additional like synth sounds to like beef them up a little bit?
Yeah. So once we record, I most of the time I walk out of the studio with the hard drive with all the takes we've done. A lot of times we get to assemble the takes during the session. So when I grab all the audio and then put it back into my sequencer, I can then sync that all up very easily with the samples that I use. And most of the time, I mute the orchestra. So anything that isn't orchestra will remain. So percussion, sometimes choir will remain as samples. But anything that I've recorded live, so strings, brass, and woodwinds, all the samples get muted and they get replaced by the real thing.
Wow.
Yes.
I love how the sound, I mean, I had, I guess, just, I mean, you can hear extra sounds in the cues, but since it's primarily orchestral, I just kind of didn't think about all the synth sounds that are added and mixed in on top of that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of layering. It's all very super nerdy and fun to, you know, because it's, you might just say, oh, hey, there's, you know, there's some strings and, you know, there's this, you know, high thing and a low thing in the strings, but that's also layered with a bunch of other sounds in between. So it's not just strings. It's not just a double bass. It's a double bass with a synth bass underneath that's making it all super fat and heavy, or, you know, the percussion is layered with other things, or, you know, it's all a matter of building that cake and putting just enough sugar, not too much sugar, and maybe putting a little fondant on here, you know, on there, and some flowers, and there's a lot of times when I go back to it and I go, okay, well, no, let's just get rid of that, get rid of that, get rid of that. Because it's easy to go overboard.
Yeah, I was wondering how you decide when a cue is done.
That's when the due date comes in. You know, that's when when they say we need to have it by this date, is that sort of what determines when you release it, because otherwise you would sort of work it to death. So it's always good to have somebody to go, no, this is good, because otherwise you would tweak it forever.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, and Ravel did that. I mean, he just couldn't leave stuff alone.
Right.
And he'd like orchestrate his piano pieces.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So I guess it's sort of comes with the territory of being a composer.
Yes,
maybe.
For sure.
Early on in your career, you got to work with Hans Zimmer writing additional music. And I wonder if that's a skill that you learned that has served you well to be like a good fit with the sound of Destiny's music.
Yes. I mean, I didn't work. It was sort of a 6 degrees of separation kind of thing. I interned at his studio. I never wrote additional music for him, but I was working for Steve Jablonski when I first started working there. And, you know, Steve worked with Hans for many years writing additional music on his projects. So it was sort of that kind of lineage. And then Steve used to do what I did for him for Harry Gregson-Williams. So it's kind of a cool pedigree there, if not that I'm comparing myself to any of those guys, but it's I tried to absorb as much as I could, by osmosis, from kind of just being there and observing. That definitely helped me, because I worked with Steve on some of the Transformers movies, and those are big and epic and bombastic, and sort of just being around those guys and seeing how how music is not just written, but really well produced was, you know, was really some really good schooling.
Yeah, I can imagine. Are there still things that you've learned from them that you've incorporated into the way you work now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd have to kind of go back and say, oh yeah, this I learned from them. But a lot of, you know, if I can boil it down, is producing the track as best as you can before it leaves your studio, even if you know it's going to be recorded by live musicians or, you know, so I don't, you know, people often talk about the mock-up, right? The mock-up of this and, you know, the mock-up, the demo. And it's like, well, I don't know if I believe in that word because, I mean, sure, it can be a demo because of how the meaning of the word, but it's not a demo because you're producing a product that most often will end up in a film or a game or, you know, so producing the in spit shining the track as best as you can before it leaves the studio is something that I took away from there for sure.
And that's a great thing to learn because I think especially these days when composers are pitching for a job, the producers or the team that's choosing people wants the most polished demo they can hear.
Yes. So. Yeah, for sure. I mean, we don't really have the luxury of saying, just imagine this being played by the French horns. You know, it's like, I mean, I wish we could, you know, and there's sometimes where, you know, a lot of composers when they can, you know, if they can afford it, they'll say, hey, I'm going to record a live orchestra just for my pitch, for my demo. And that will, you know, that will a lot of times get them the gig.
Yeah. Well, it shows they're serious for one thing.
Yes, for sure.
You've been given the task of writing music for some of the bosses, and that's got to be its own special discipline, I would think, because the boss battles, they can go on for quite a while.
Yes.
And so you have to find a way, especially if I'm doing it repeatedly dying, you know, you can't really know how long a player is going to take to get to, you know, the next thing. So how do you deal with boss battles?
It's interesting. It's, you know, we write sort of, you know, horizontally as well as vertically. So we write it in sections. So the whole piece is modular, even though it is written, you know, from A to Z in a, you know, from start to end in a way. But depending on what the section is, it has to, you know, if you're doing an action thing, for example, it has to start at 10. I can't really build into it. So if I'm writing something that I know is going to be action, it's like, okay, well, from the very start, I have to start at 10. And that 10 has to continue. And so the challenge is, how do I write something at a level 10 that will remain interesting for the player and not get very repetitive? And so I think about what it would be like for me. It's like, okay, well, I can't really do four bars of something and then copy paste and then add a layer. I mean, I could, but that would be incredibly lazy. So that's been also an interesting muscle to flex, is to figure out how to keep it interesting for, you know, 5 minutes or 4 minutes or whatever it is of an action thing that's, you know, very intense. And then what happens when I deliver is the really smart people at Bungie grab my music and then they figure out how to do variations of that with the way that I'm able to deliver it.
Oh, wow. That's very cool.
Yeah.
And then they can make it fit and extend the time or whatever and break it into stems. And
right. So there are sections that we are able to loop. We can call them pre-outs, I suppose, where there are sections that are able to loop within each other and you're able to go seamlessly from, you know, so say we're in the middle of a phrase, you are able to cut that phrase off musically so that, and that, again, this is all done by very smart people. I just think of it, you know, as I'm writing it, okay, this has to be able to go from 10 to, you know, to the final thing when you actually kill the guy. And that's all, you know, what's called implementation in the game. And they've got very smart people doing that sort of thing. They just tell me, here's what you need to deliver, and here's what's going on in the level. And then I just kind of close my eyes and say, here you go. Here goes nothing.
Well, do you feel like you're able to keep your own voice with these cues?
I think so. I don't know if I'm necessarily consciously trying to do that. I'm mostly just trying to service the game. I think it happens naturally. What's interesting though is you know, between all of us that are writing music on the game, Mike and Sky have somehow done this incredible magic where it's all very cohesive and it's all one encompassing game, right? It's not like, oh, well, this cue sounds like it's from this one guy and this other cue sounds like it's from this other guy. So having those themes and you know, a certain sound palette really unifies the entire thing, and Sky and Mike have done a really, really cool job of bringing that all together.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, just listening to the soundtrack, just track after track, I really can't tell who's done what.
Right, and it's funny. Sometimes I forget. It's like, wait, is that me or is that I don't know who that was. You know, so.
That is so cool. Well, I know that they've got big plans to continue the story for Destiny. So did those plans include you? Do you have any idea?
I certainly hope so. I mean, I think maybe at this point you might know more than I do. But, you know, they haven't told me no. But although the phone hasn't rang in a couple of weeks, so maybe I have to call back and say, hey, you guys still need me?
Oh, well, there's always a little downtime after
that's true.
You know, the next flip.
For sure.
I wouldn't worry yet. So.
I think I'll be worried once they release something and I go, wait a minute, I wasn't on that.
Yep, missed that boat. Hey, come on.
Exactly.
Well, Peter, how can people find you on social or on your website?
So, you know, Peter Schlosser, which the spelling, I know it's a mouthful. It's Peter with an I, P-I-E-T-E-R. And my last name is S-C-H-L-O-S-S-E-R. So that's my Instagram. And I have a website, peterschlosser.com. And yeah, those are the, you know, I'm on Facebook, you know, and all those things. I'm sure people will be able to find me somehow with the Google.
I would think so, yeah. It's funny how that it's pretty easy these days.
Yes, yes.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to talk again about more music that you've written for Destiny. And this has been really fun, so thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for the chat, and I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy that people are listening to our music.